don't need them. Lord knows I don't need them. Telling me I can see them, but I never need them. Listen close to my leader. They tell me that they need me, but they trying to deceive me. I'm free now, please lead me. I'm taking my freedom now. I'm living in freedom now. I'm taking my freedom now. I'm taking my freedom now. I'm taking my freedom back. I'm taking my freedom back. I'm living in freedom now. Hey.
Good morning, good evening, good night. I just hope it's good wherever you are, and welcome back to Inquisitive Minds. And we're happy to be here. First of all, let me introduce the host with the most. The original, the intellectual, the creative, DJ Aaron 868. How are you, sir?
I am really good. Can't complain at all. What direction are you trying to point in, Caro?
You answer the man question and give me a chance, please.
Let's start already, boy. Watch.
Yeah, but now, honestly, RL, good. I can't complain at all. I had an excellent carnival season mixed with culture and culture companionship and a couple good drinks.
And some love to pull it together.
What?
Love of the culture. Sorry, I didn't
love, yeah. For the love of the music, guessing about that.
I really hope you only pay for one of those three things, eh? But anyway, we're listening.
I didn't pay for any of them, actually.
Thank you very much, sir. Anyway, the original Ricardo Mitchell, the social stage, how are you doing now? Good evening, good afternoon, good night, good everything. What vibes?
Hey, good everything for real, boy. I am cool, man. I am cool. Despite the temperature of the evenings, I real cool. I can't complain. Good company.
Yeah.
I don't have it the way other people have it, but in terms of the company and the culture and the all those things that you talk about, yeah, man, I can't complain myself either. Glad to be here.
Amen. And today I am really, really pleased to introduce our guest, Mr. Tyrell Gittens. Now, to kind of give a little bit of a backstory in terms of Tyrell, when I did a training program a year ago now with Climate Tracker, in terms of journalists, you know, training journalists, in terms of providing them with information in terms of environmental strategy, climate change, I did a little bit of energy geopolitics, and I had this group of young people. I love working with young people. And I would have met Tyrell in that session, and he asked the most poignant and I would say a very difficult question to answer. I won't get into the question, but it impressed me immediately that he asked that question. And if I remember correctly, in terms of not getting into details, but he would have spoken about the system that underlies organizations and their performance, and why there isn't a focus on climate change and environmental strategy if it is good for business, right? And it's really about what drives the behavior and why, what are the incentives and stuff like that. And I was impressed by it. And I have been reading his work in terms of his journalism, and I'm very impressed with him in terms of his work, and I want to use this opportunity to introduce Tyrell. Tyrell, welcome to Inquisitive Minds. How are you doing, boss?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm doing fine. Dileron would have brought up Carnival. I've all Carnival to bankers listening soca music right before I came on, you know, to talk to you gentlemen. But I'm doing fine, very grateful to have been given the platform to, you know, join you all to discuss some, you know, serious issues, but in a very lighthearted and fun way this afternoon. And, you know, I would have appreciated, you know, the comments that I made before and the observations. You know, I think that is all part of how we will, you know, move forward on some of these issues that we'll discuss this afternoon, is asking those questions, the hard questions, the easy questions, and just having, you know, conversations, because that is where ideas are born from.
Amen. I love that. I really love that. And the interesting thing about it, in terms of, to connect with Tyrell, it was a few months, but it's what he was working on in that time that was very, very important. You know, And I know the last time you would have been out of the country that you would have attended the Biodiversity Cup. So my first question is about, like, what is this Biodiversity Cup Congress of the Parties? Why the United Nations decide to do something like this? What you picked up from it from a journalistic point of view? And then we will start to get into the work, and then of course get into what you are about and as a person. So let's ask into the last foray, and then we'll continue with question. So what is this Biodiversity Cup that you reported on?
Yeah, so I actually would have had the honor of participating in the last two UN conferences, actually. So the first, which I would have reported on, was COP27, which was the 2022 United Nations Climate Change Conference. And then, fortunately, a few weeks later, I would have gotten selected to actually travel to Montreal, Canada, and be a youth delegate at COP15, the 2022 Montreal Biodiversity Conference. So both of those conferences are, of course, by the United Nations, and they are kind of like a table where all the nations of the world, you know, gather and try to not only figure out how these issues like climate change and unsustainable, you know, development affect our daily lives, but at these conferences, they really want to give countries the opportunity to come up with solutions for it. So the names are kind of pretty much self-explanatory, but there is also, you know, some controversy, or must I say discussion, about they actually having two different conferences. So the climate change conference is where they meet every year in a different country to, of course, revisit climate change goals and see how the world is doing as it relates to, you know, hitting some of the climate targets that we would set, such as reducing emissions and so forth. Whereas the Biodiversity Conference is held every 2 years, and it's similar in terms of, you know, setting goals to protect biodiversity and seeing what is being done around the world to protect biodiversity. But as it would have been noted with these last two conferences, the Climate Change Conference got a little more attention than the Biodiversity Conference, which kind of gives the illusion that, you know, both issues are not on the same, you know, footing as it relates to, in terms of importance, and you need to address these issues. So coming out of those two cups, you know, the discussion moving forward was not only the goal, but how we could work to, you know, make those issues more connected, because a lot of the goals that have come out at these conferences, as we'll discuss, kind of seemed, you know, kind of disconnected when these issues are actually connected in our daily lives and in the world.
So, pardon for the early interjection, but 2 points on note. Well, three, actually. One, Brendan James, I don't know if you introduce everybody else and they didn't introduce yourself. I realize that's a habit you have. It's a mark of your humility, but ladies and gentlemen, this is Brendan James, the brain behind this brainchild, Inquisitive Minds, and he's too humble to do that himself. So that's one. Secondly, Mr. Gittins, sir, I believe I sat in on the session, one of the sessions that Brendan did, when he actually, when you offered some points that actually kept the conversation going a couple extra minutes, because that was when people started asking the real questions, as opposed to the polite, well, yes, let's take some information, say one or two things so that people realize we were here. If I one, you have a distinct voice, and two, the tone of your questions was such that I actually remember that I sat in to see what other work Brendan was doing, and you did leave a mark. So kudos and congratulations on that. The third point is that I'm a little disappointed that coming out of two different conferences, where ultimately they're connected, you said that they have very different goals. So there's a disparity based on what, who is doing the representation at that point in time, even though the items are so interconnected.
Yeah, so firstly, again, you know, thanks a lot for the feedback you'd have given. Again, I believe that, you know, I'm someone who like to challenge the current systems that we live in, because when we talk about things like climate change and protecting biodiversity, we like to be polite and not be very realistic about what it is sometimes, which is companies, you know, making money, making profit, sometimes governments prioritizing certain, you know, political things over actually doing what needs to be done. So this is the real conversations that we need to be having. It's not always pleasant. It wouldn't always, you know, rub people the right way, but it's how we will get, you know, the conversations going and the work done. To your point in terms of coming out of the conferences, the conversations would have been very siloed. So at the climate change conference, there was a biodiversity day. At the biodiversity day, I believe there was something to the effect of a climate change day when they would have created the two agreements from the two conferences. We had the, you know, the COP27 agreements, which would have been one of the major things coming out of that, would have been funding for like small island developing states. Coming out of COP15, it would have been making the process more inclusive to ensure that different communities, you know, have voices represented in protecting biodiversity, as well as protecting 30% of the world's biodiversity in the first instance. But when I mean that they had, you know, different outcomes, the conversations really wasn't connecting how these issues are connected on the ground. So, for example, climate change affects biodiversity because, of course, if we're having changes in global temperatures and we're having, you know, sea level rise and changes in temperature of oceans, that's going to affect the biodiversity that lives in the world. Vice versa, biodiversity affects climate change. We have a lot of different species and organisms that play a very unique role in maintaining different cycles, such as producing oxygen or different nutrients. And those things in turn drive the climate, drive the different atmospheric processes that we have in the world. So if we are not having the discussions showing those links between the issue and we are just going into a climate change conference to set a goal to reduce emissions or to set a goal to protect this percentage of biodiversity, to me, where there is a lack is how is it connected to each other? How do we know that, you know, the percentage of biodiversity that we have committed to protecting while honorable, how do we know that it will have this effect on climate? Or, for example, setting these goals in terms of reducing emissions or you know, reducing different harmful practices might affect species and species loss related to climate change. These issues are not, you know, discussed in that way, and this is what we'd like to see more of. We understand why there is two conferences. It is a lot to cover in either conferences, but the processes need to be more interconnected. I'm not sure, you know, there is a discussion to have at COP15. I would have had the opportunity to sit in on a discussion with the United Nations Secretary General, Mr. Antonio Guterres. I would have actually had the opportunity to, you know, be the MC and introduce him on stage and stuff, and we would have asked him that question, why are the two conferences, you know, first of all, presented in a way that the issues are siloed, but apart from that, why is like the climate change conference, you know, being given more attention than the biodiversity conference? You know, this is an ongoing discussion because, of course, with climate change, we're talking about oil and money and so forth. So have different, you know, factors that play into why these two conferences and these two issues are presented so vastly, but we need to always maintaining the roots of the conversations that they are connected, and when we are setting goals for one, it must be related to the other.
Now, I go in and be the man to bring this back down to the ground level here, right? Because the average person in Trinidad and Tobago, or even the average one of our peers, frankly, doesn't pay attention to the COP conference. Only if you have a vested interest in something there, you would pay attention to it. I think what got a lot of persons interested in the COP conference was, I think, Mia Mottley's speech that was trending on Twitter. And again, she brought it down to the average man. right? Now, you are saying that a lot of the goal setting happens in silos, and that I know it's not an overnight change that's going to take place for it to be a holistic and synergistic approach. But is there? Yes, Ricardo, I know big words. Come on.
Sorry, sir.
Right? But from a younger perspective, as somebody that is now getting the opportunity to get their foot in the door, do you see the elders, the adults, the leaders who are in the current positions making any strides towards a synergistic approach?
Yeah. So before I just answer that question, to the point of, you know, the public not being as aware of the different conferences, that is a very important point. Maybe later on, just for clarity, although I am a journalist, I'm actually a geographer and environmentalist as well. So I have, you know, later on we could probably discuss, you know, some of like the fields I work in. But in being a journalist, I've had the opportunity to write a lot of environmental stories. And yes, people are unaware, but what I've noticed is that, to the credit of the general public, there's an appetite there to learn. I think it's a case of where the media could just, like, you know, create more avenues to have those stories promoted. We know we live in a culture of plain talk where the bacchanal and the politics and the crime and those things that get your attention is always, you know, front page and front and center. But I think we as the media and we as people who have these platforms need to create the space to give the general public the opportunity to receive that information, as well as our leaders could also do more to promote what is being done. Because as much as I am very critical, I do give our country, and this is coming back to, you know, the main part of the question, a lot of credit that there are efforts being done to make our model of development and livelihoods in Trinidad and Tobago more sustainable. I think more could be done to sensitize the public of those efforts. Some of those efforts include, you know, they would have recently opened a renewable solar-powered energy plant in Kuva. So what they are doing is they have plans to develop more plants, plans to green the airport. So they have plans to convert some of the functions in the airport to run on renewable energy. They are currently working on an electric vehicle, you know, emission scheme to help promote electric vehicle use in Trinidad and Tobago. You know, that brings a lot of questions on, like, you know, investing and actually setting up like charging stations. You know, there are already some incentives to give people, you know, the opportunity to get like electric vehicles and stuff. More could be done, and also more could be done to sensitize the public to know that these things are being done and the importance of it. You know, one of the biodiversity goals that would have been revisited at COP15, which I would have attended in December, would have been a goal to promote and ensure that there is proper education in terms of biodiversity. From 2010 to 2020 was the UN decade of biodiversity. One of the targets that would have been set that the world failed in was, you know, having more environmental education, promoting, you know, more education as it relates to biodiversity and so forth. So as a world, we are failing on, I would say, ensuring that environmental education is incorporated in all aspects of our education levels. And I would say as a society, as our officials, as authorities, more can be done to not only make people aware of what is being done in terms of making our country more sustainable, but getting them involved in the conversation. One of my COP stories that I've interviewed, a very brilliant young man, I don't know if you all know him, Amilcar Sanatan. And in that, he would have said a problem with, he's a social development, you know, expert. He said a problem with our model of governance here in the Caribbean is we use consultancy, like, you know, when you go to have any public consultations, it's just a what if, and just getting public opinions to be okay as a by the way we talk to the public about issues, we get their feedback just to say that, you know, we're doing it. But what we actually need to do in the Caribbean, and it also comes back to your point, is make the decision-making process more inclusive. So let's get the common, I wouldn't like to say the common man, I don't like to use that term, but let's get people from the general public involved in the decision-making process from the beginning at those tables when they're drafting policies, when they're drafting bills. Don't come like while it is, like right before it's going to pass in Parliament and just ask people, well, what is the view? I think we need to be more inclusive and have people engaged in those processes. So again, it's all connected. We have to educate people, yes, but we also have to be empowering people to, you know, participate in the processes to make the change. Something that people made a lot, and this is my last point, I don't want to, you know, go on a whole long rant, but
we are interrupted, so.
That would have been repeatedly said at COP15, the importance of having myself, and there was more than 100 of us in terms of youth delegates there at COP15, wasn't just to say that we were part of COP15, like, you know, having us as tokens being there, is actually to say we did have a voice in the process of creating the final agreements, and we are, well, we are present leaders, but in terms of future leaders and executing some of these decisions, we could actually say that we was there and we understood how it was created, why it was created, and why those, you know, goals were created. And it's the same as the question I know DJ Aaron would have asked. People need to be aware of the issue, but also have a voice in it and have a greater role participating. I don't know if y'all knew that Chile, they would have recently had a referendum process. It didn't pass. But part of that referendum process to rewrite the entire constitution of the country. It was a constitutional reform process. They would have actually formed a committee of just the general public, of young people in university, you know, different stakeholders, different leaders in their different fields. And that's what we need to do. Yeah. If it wasn't a to B, you know, answer, but things are, you know, very complex, very layered, and we need to recognize that to create the change.
That is actually like a encompassing answer, because if you look at it, it addresses a lot of the things we have spoken about here before, right? You're talking about the electric vehicles, and then you're talking about how they want to put incentives, which brings us back to my favorite S-word in Trinidad and Tobago. They go in and offer subsidies for people to... to shift the electric vehicles. But when they offer a subsidy, do we, and then now over time you want to remove the subsidy, to go in and say, oh, the government bad, but you get mad discount to go in the first place.
Yeah,
so it is a real difficult thing, and you're addressing constitutional reform. How long have we been asking for constitutional reform for something as simple as local government in Trinidad and Tobago? So how we going and get it for climate change?
Yeah.
When we can allocate funds properly to the areas that the funds come from. But
yeah, and you made an important point there, and I would use the LED bulb initiative when they, you know, gave out LED bulbs to households. Brilliant effort, but we need to understand that these things are more complex, these things are more layered. I don't know if it's done, to my knowledge. I don't think it was done, but was there any research after these LED bulbs were given out to see exactly how energy use in the households would have changed, or it probably would have affected energy use on a national basis, if in any way it contributed to the reduction of emissions as it relates to our energy use? And I would have made that point to the electric vehicle point that you would have made. Yes, there are a lot of incentives But these things cannot be done in a vacuum. We cannot just be like, well, we are given incentives. Is it actually changing behaviors? Is it, are we doing research to see how these things are affecting in the long term? As a society, you know, we need to think more holistically. And I think that is the fault of governments, past and present. You know, I'm always very objective. I will give Jack his jacket when, you know, it is to be given, but it comes back to the point that you would have asked. Leadership also plays a very important role, as well as what we do as the general public. And in Trinidad and Tobago, when we're addressing all these issues, these are the things that actually need to be considered as well. Again, not just climate change, not just biodiversity, because we also need proper leadership, and we also need to ensure that these things are being done holistically. I see your eye, as you know, but I tend to be, I've done, you know, radio interviews and said the same thing. So we need to be realistic with ourselves as a society. It's not just a Trinidad thing, by the way, it's a global thing, but we need to look at home. So we need to start at home before
It's Keith fault.
Yeah.
That's K-E-E-T, yeah? I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well done. I like that.
Yeah, that do work, eh? As we found out a couple of months ago when we interviewed a lawyer, an attorney. But I'm curious. It seems, now I hear what you're saying, eh? But we have a situation here where we have two different conferences, one annually, one every other year. They're not talking about...
Biannually,
right? The reason I use every other year is because we have an issue with bi-monthly, because people are not sure whether bi-monthly means twice a month or every 2 months. So
you know what? I agree with that, right? I would have worked, you know, with some media house before, and I also had a series, and after a while the series became bi-monthly, and I used to promote the story and stories, and I used to say, is it by month? It was twice a month, but then I realized, oh, this could be so a failure.
Right.
That. So, English language.
This asking is why we need our ear on, because at the end of the day, I know why I see what I see or didn't see what I didn't see. And we occasionally we need somebody to reflect the less sophisticated train of thought. You know, it's sometimes it's Aaron, sometimes it's me. It's hardly ever Brendan though. But to get back on track, it seems
can
as if...
Can you mute him? Can he be muted?
I know doing that.
What I'm saying, right, is we have these two groups, or at least we have multiple groups having conversations. It reminds me of the situation in Trinidad where we have the TTCO and the COTT, right? We have the Trinidad and Tobago Copyright Organization, and we have the Copyright Organization of Trinidad and Tobago. So when you want to deal with a group now, which one of the two groups you're going to deal with to address your issues, right? And then who's, look, Aaron is drifting. And who sets the standard, right? What is the standard? Are you telling me that biodiversity is going to pick a number and say, all right, this is a critical point, right? And then climate change going to come and say, well, you know what? We understand they say that that's a critical point, but our attainable point is something else. So we're going to aim for what it is and measure our approach. Aaron, you all right there?
No, I want to add to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So since you use the example of TTCO and COTT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that because one of the conferences, we'll call the Biodiversity Conference, CUT, has a lot more nations present and it covers a lot more nations, does that make it the all-encompassing conference? But because TTCO is the cheaper option and everybody does pay attention to that, does that make that the better option?
I see where you're going with today. So that's actually, you know what, it does tie into what it is I'm saying. Right? Is it a case of one will actually say, listen, these are the critical points, and so the other group will say, well, all right, these are the attainable points. Because you know what, if you tell me hitting 17% of whatever objective it is enough, is the tipping point for change, right? And by change, we mean this is where it's going to start to save money. And then someone else comes and says, you know, at 25%, the migratory pattern of a wolf, or, you know, the pollination patterns of our bee, right, impacted at 25%. is it that now we have different standards based on what your interests are? And again, we all know is money makes the world go round, right? Is it a case of people go to the option that is favorable, even if it's not necessarily better? You know, what is causing this? Is it some kind of climate Illuminati? the Illuminati? Anyway, we'll figure that out. But what I'm saying
No.
It seems as if the same way we have in public consultation, just before we parade a bill or something along those lines, and the consultation is really a two-question survey asking you what you think about it and where you hear it from. It kind of starting to feel as if some of these conferences are having conferences just to see, well, this is the action that we're taking. Yeah. Right? So Yeah, go ahead.
So the first thing is we would have set a goal. I will not, like, you know, say the incorrect thing of when the goal was set or, like, when it was supposed to be achieved. Bob, any of you have ever heard 1.5 to stay alive? Right, so that's our favorite, well, not favorite, it's actually a very well-known tagline of the world was supposed to maintain global temperature change to 1.5 or below to basically, you know, keep the effects of climate change as minimal as possible. The world has failed, you know, abysmally at that goal. We are on point to actually see global temperature change exceed 2 degrees Celsius, you know, in the next few decades. So scientists have already say 1.5 to stay alive. I mean, that was the tagline. Based on that, we're dead. But let's still have some hope that we could, you know, this is where we come to talk about climate change, you know, adaption and so on. But in regards to the two issues and how they are approached, again, I think it's political will, and a lot of it is, you know, the almighty dollar. We know how profitable the oil and natural gas industry is. It runs, you know, our country. So if you have to give, you know, governments and decision makers the process of continuing to make, you know, money from oil and natural gas versus, you know, stopping the industries altogether and just shifting to renewable energy. I mean, you know how it would work, but I am not a person of extremes. So when you talk about, you know, the different groups and you know, people approach these issues, I'm someone who like to see it from, like, you know, a more rational point of view. For example, oil and natural gas, I wish we could work faster towards moving away from oil and natural gas. Unfortunately, we still have officials, no name call, going on international, you know, news platforms and saying, hey, we have oil and natural gas, and are really participating in the more global discussion, which is, you know, moving towards renewable energy. I'm, you know, will consider myself to be a rational person. As a country, as a world, we're not going to stop using oil and natural gas. Mm-hmm. Tonight, no one is saying that just from tonight into tomorrow when we use an oil and natural gas. But the thing is, we can't do it as of midnight tonight. But it is really, it's just a process. And the thing is, getting that process started at COP27, which is the climate change COP, they would have finally, you know, agreed to create a new funding mechanism for small island developing states like us in the Caribbean and Pacific and so on to access funding. That is actually something that they have been working on to make a possibility since the early 2000s or before. And it's only last year that they would have included it on the agenda of a climate change COP. I see in DJ Aaron's face. For the last 20-something plus years, small island developing states like the Caribbean and the Pacific has been asking for that issue of funding climate change, having a proper funding mechanism included on the agenda, which means just basically having countries talk about it. And that wasn't substantially placed on the agenda until last year, the last COP. And then they finally came out from that COP to agree to create a new funding mechanism for climate change. And it's still just an agreement. We still have to go through the nitty-gritty of actually setting that up. So it's something that we're going to see playing out for a couple more years, you know, Lord alone knows how long again. But in a lot of these options, as you're saying, it comes to, I think, you know, there's not just our government or any other government, you know, having that political will and, you know, seeing the importance of making progress on these issues. I was shocked to learn that the U.S. is actually not part of that, the Convention on Biological Diversity, which is that process of protecting the world's biodiversity. They are not a signatory, and I was surprised to know a country so large as the U.S., you know, isn't a signatory to something so important. So, you know, what does it really tell you about the world? He was asking about the process leading up to the conferences. Right now, what happens after? So COP is like, you know, they have the pageants. COP is like the big pageant, but you know, like you have this training and thing months before the big pageant. Countries actually have discussion for months before these COPs, where they are supposed to be, you know, coming up with the goals, setting the targets, writing the reports, and so on. I mean, I would love to know, and this comes back to what we were discussing earlier, what is actually going on now? And we just sat at the last Global Biodiversity Conference. There will be a more inclusive process. How are we as Trinidadians and people around the world going to see that, you know, process being more inclusive? Are we going to be seeing ads in the, you know, newspapers saying, well, okay, we're going to revise, because each country is now going to be revising their MBSAP, which is the National Biodiversity Action and Plans, right? So each country now has to go back, because a new goal was set after the last COP to protect, as I tell you, global biodiversity and achieve certain goals. And this is where we as journalists and as, you know, thought, what is it we're looking for? As people who come together and think and have these discussions now, to ask these questions of our officials moving forward for the next year, of how are these processes going to be inclusive, and has it already started? Because I don't know. So this is where us as the media and as people with these platforms now need to be asking these questions. And if it isn't as inclusive as it should be, we should be asking the question, why or how? I hope that answered, you know, the question, Ricardo.
Definitely appreciate the information. In terms of the underlying question, it still feels as if we haven't meetings to discuss when the next meeting is. You know,
yeah,
we just haven't a meeting to say, hey, we had a meeting,
pretty many minutes,
we had some snacks, we had some drinks, it was all well and good. I'll see you all in a year.
Next meeting.
Yeah, no, and I would have made this point many times. I think I need to copyright it. I hope no one, you know, take it, because I'd have said it at a few panels and cups and stuff. We have the luxury to fly to different countries. The next cup will be in Turkey in, if I'm correct, 2024. The next climate conference will be in Dubai at the end of this year. We have the luxury to look at, yes, this year, COP 28 will be in Dubai.
Kieran wants to know if you have room in the suitcase.
Yeah, so we have the luxury to fly to all these conferences and to set these goals and say, well, next 10 years, but every day, and this is just the reality, we have animals dying. We have forest fires around the world where tons of, you know, different species are being killed at alarming rates. So I don't know if you all remember, a few years ago, the Amazon was literally on fire, and every day thousands of animals were dying in the Amazon. So we have the luxury to fly to Dubai this year, and fly to Australia another year, and fly to Canada, and it's all well and fine. And me being there, realize that this is just a conference, so is it translating to what we are doing on the ground. What is the action that is coming out of it? And that comes back to my original point. Now we need to be asking the questions of our leaders, what is next? Because work is being done. Trinidad, to the credit of the country, is signatory to probably every environmental agreement on the face of the earth. To my knowledge, we are a signatory. I would give kudos to Mr. Kishan Kumar Singh. He's the head of the Multilateral Environmental Agreements Unit at the Ministry of Planning. I see, you know, Brandon Clapping. He's a person, always very busy. He makes himself available to journalists and so forth to answer questions. So, you know, we need to make use of the accessibility to ask the questions. And I believe that, I would like to believe that everyone, you know, has the right intention, not just for Trinidad and Tobago, for the world, because I always ask the question, why is it so radical to want clean air or clean water or to live in a clean world? Like, this is just, it comes down to life. This is where we are living. Why is it such a radical or extreme thought to want to live in a clean environment and to ensure that our resources are there, not just for us, but for future generations as well, which is the definition of sustainable development. Why do we need to spend 20 years to come to an agreement that we're going to create a proper funding mechanism for climate change? The world don't have the luxury of 20 years. Animals don't have the luxury of 20 years. I would have interviewed Dr. Aidan Farrell, he's a researcher at UWE, because I write at UWE Today, the magazine, and I'd have done a piece with him, and he would have given me an example which are sticks, and I'd have repeated it a lot, because it's something to think about. We have some very unique species in Trinidad and Tobago that could only thrive at, you know, certain environmental conditions. So we have a certain species of frog, I think it's a golden rocket frog, I hope I don't get that wrong, but it only lives at certain altitudes on our highest peaks, such as like Mount Cerro de la Rico? I was getting around the highest, yeah. That only live on those very high peaks in Trinidad. And of course, the temperatures are changing. It's getting warmer. So when the temperature gets warmer, obviously species that are lower can move to higher ground, where it could be cooler. But what about those species that live at the very top and they're only adapted to those very specific conditions? When the temperature raises to a point that frog cannot tolerate it anymore, what will happen to those species? And that could be a few years depending on the rate that we are going at right now. So those frogs can say, well, next 10 years we have a couple be. Maybe we set the goal by the next 10 years, those frogs will be, you know, those frogs will be gone. So I do believe there is an importance in having these conferences. I'm sure if we have just a general discussion amongst us here in the podcast, we're not going to agree on everything that you know, we talk about. And I saw it play out in real life where countries being around that negotiating table. That's a very, you know, difficult process to manage, to just agree to a country agreeing to a certain line and like a tax and so on. So for countries to actually be there and participating in the process, I would like to believe we would want to do something with it. So now we need to, in plain, you know, plain words, make all these fancy documents now translate to daily life. Are we actually going to change things, educate people more, and make the world more sustainable? I ponder the same thing that you ponder with. It was very nice to, you know, travel to Canada and be at that conference and to participate in it. But in a few somber moments, and we would have said this publicly, it's, you know, no secret, we also wondered to ourselves, like, okay, what is going to come out of it now? Are we just at a fancy conference? And hopefully that wasn't the case. And I just to say, I always say, and not because I'm a young person, being, you know, at a conference and part of a delegate with those amount of young people, as I was going to say, young people, we are going to save the world. I know some and the, you know, older, this is not like a generational divide or anything, but I think, you know, just seeing the passion there amongst the young people and hearing how they talk, some people was crying and so forth, getting emotional because they understand this is the world that we're going to have to live in the next 20, 30 years. Like, we don't have the luxury right now to be like, well, to just kick the issue down the can. So if it's anyone going to be to change the world right now, I believe it is young people. And I don't mean that in a cheesy way. I think if a lot of young people who have the ideas get into positions where they could actually do things, we could see some of these changes because they have that passion, they understand the importance of it. And just like I've been speaking my mind here in the podcast, I believe we are a generation too that understands just, you know, being realistic about things and dealing with it, not trying to kick it down the can or trying to be polite. We understand this is an issue, it needs to be solved, and we need to get to work. And if we don't do it, well, then I don't know what our future would look like. And this is just us. So imagine the younger children who are like babies, and what world are we leaving for them?
I want to acknowledge the work that Brendan has been doing for years, right, off the record. And now I'm grateful that he's on the record. But there's a point he made in our mentorship program. He was a facilitator on with me last year. At the number of Category 5 hurricanes, right, that we haven't. I think there was a comment he made, Brendan, what was it about? We weren't supposed to see some level of hurricane for maybe another 100 years, and now we have multiple per year.
Is the Category 5 hurricanes, I mean, you'll get maybe 1-2 in every 100 years. Can't remember the exact data point now, but right now, the last set that we have actually should have been categorized as a Category 6, but we don't have a Category 6, because we've never experienced winds like that before. Yeah, you go ahead.
And I'm so happy that you brought up that, Ricardo, and this is a very clear example, and I always used it. God is a trini because we never get storms and so on. But look at in the last 5 years how many tropical storms we have had encounters with. So if that doesn't say something is changing, a country like Trinidad and Tobago, which lies outside of the Atlantic hurricane belt, if we're not supposed to be getting tropical storms and so on. And in the last 5 years, I believe we had Brett, it was done. And I believe last year we had one, it was a few. I forget the name of the top of my head right now. So if in the last 5 years we had encounters with at least 3 tropical storms, and we are not supposed to be in an area where tropical storms and hurricanes develop, what does that say? Look at the level of flooding we would have experienced last year. And in 2018, these things are sometimes, you know, once in a 100-year event or so forth, because the probability of them happening is so, like, you know, so sparse. It takes so many years, but now it's happening every other year or every year. So what does that say if we literally see in the changes? What does it say for the will and where we at?
I think a huge part of why a lot of the population, not just Trinidad and Tobago, but around the world, doesn't take climate change and sustainability seriously is because a lot of us are tending to tune into non-traditional sources of media as opposed to the ones that are speaking of the actual issues, right? So you have persons around me saying, yeah, we wouldn't get a hurricane, but it's because then they will say, oh, climate change is radical because they're using the harp. And yeah, I just put it out there because that is exactly what persons are saying. So how do you battle, and how do journalists battle putting out the real information as opposed to a lot of misinformation that is being spewed?
So, you know, different actors with different agendas and motives will, of course, try to manipulate people's views to see things in different ways. So I think it's no secret to anybody in the world of how, you know, certain bad actors and so forth have used social media and these different platforms to push, you know, false fake news and false information and so forth. And again, it could be monetary or to sway certain things, and people do things, and it comes back to some of the earlier conversation, because there is a motive behind it, usually money, which is the root of everything, unfortunately. But coming back to your main point, not to ramble or to rant too much to that point, I think we need to make people understand that the environment and climate change is basically our life. So we know in a world with a cost of living crisis right now, you know, food crisis, food security issues around the world and so forth, but all these things wouldn't exist if we don't have a world. We wouldn't have an economy if we don't have healthy ecosystems. We wouldn't have an economy if we don't have, if we don't live in places with, you know, climates that are conducive to human settlements and so forth, with you know, without extreme weather and so forth. So it's basically to make people understand that if we don't have a healthy environment, we're not going to have a will and all of these things to worry about. It is so important that if we don't have a healthy environment, we mightn't even have food on the table to complain about the price of food, because climate change affects things like our ability to grow food or to fish and so forth. So we need a healthy environment to have these resources that we worry about. So people need to understand the importance of it. And again, it comes down to just us in the media. I take my job as a journalist very seriously. So I, of course, I want to ensure that when I'm writing stories, they're accurate, they're very balanced. Sometimes I write about things or opinions that I may not agree with, but I know that it's important to the conversation and to have all views included. And that is the definition of journalism. So yeah, this is what we have to do. See, Aaron, you know.
I raise my hand like I'm in class here. So that goes back to the first point that you would have raised inside today's interview, where you spoke of a lot of things happening in silos, as opposed to a holistic and synergistic approach.
Yes.
Because you spoke just now about people complaining about a food shortage, right? And I'm just using that loosely.
Yeah.
Pricing, price gouging, and all these different things, but not understanding that if it has floods in Oropun Gardens, and I bring it locally here, if it has floods in Oropun Gardens and the rice fields have been flooded, hence bringing a shortage of the available supply of rice, then the price of rice now has to go up. But the same person will throw the fridge in the drain and then complain about it, or would not carpool to go to work, increasing possible emissions, and then say it's the government fault. Not understanding that we all have parts to play to ensure that a sustainable future is in front of us, and not just for us, for our children or even our unborn grandchildren. It is like an Excel is a circular reference.
You made the point plain right there, and we tend to blame the, you know, the government a lot for a lot of things. And yes, the government have a role to play, but you would have highlighted that we have people. Today I was coming down the bus route and passing them, I just happened to glance at the big drain, the river, whatever it is, like right there. And I noticed a bunch of plastic. And in my mind, the first thing that came to mind is we always have, like, you know, floods and so forth is an issue, but look at the entire drain. It's filled with plastic. How could we, as rational and reasonable people, think that that is the government fault? And, you know, we don't have some level of responsibility and accountability to play in issues like pollution and so forth. I am always realistic that, you know, people have different socioeconomic realities and so forth. So it may not be as easy for people to, like, you know, invest in solar power and so forth. But also those little things that you could do that doesn't really require much effort, like maybe using less plastics or not polluting, or just like, you know, taking a moment to participate in a beach cleanup and so forth. Like, as well as we understand the role of the government, and you said it perfectly, it is also a relationship. And it comes back to, I think, which is the theme of what we have been discussing for the entire podcast, for this entire, you know, this entire segment, that everything connected, and we as individuals need to understand the role that we play. I'm a journalist, and I would use it as an example. If I, you know, as a journalist, write something that I knowingly know isn't true, or maybe inflammatory, or wouldn't, you know, contribute towards the positive development of journalism in Trinidad and Tobago, if I do something like that, you know, understanding how it may affect how people view journalists, then that is me not taking accountability, you understand? And it comes the same way with people polluting and, you know, doing all these things. If you're doing something that you intentionally know is wrong without taking any accountability or trying to change that, or not understanding what you're doing, it affects the grand scheme of everything. So we have to be conscious of what we are doing and how we are doing it. And people need to, you know, take opportunities to also to learn and to continue, you know, participating. Again, it's all well and fine that as a nation, you know, we tend to love these, but let's also, you know, think about the importance of some actual issues like the environment and so forth. Like, I understand the importance, and I always say it because I'm a journalist, the importance of reporting on politics and crime, and those things are important, but there are also other pressing issues that need to be addressed as well. And we need to take, you know, some accountability to ensure that those conversations, because if we as a public show these media houses and reporters that we want to see environmental news, we want to see more stories about climate change, we want to learn more about COP when it's happening and so forth, media houses and journalists will be inclined to write those stories because it's our audience for it. So we also, you know, need to play a part in, yeah.
It's a real critical point that both of y'all raised there. I mean, Aaron is right in terms of people, we could do better. We could do better. You throw out a plastic bottle a few months down the road, you and your family ingesting that one. Let's be realistic. These plastics don't disappear. They enter into your system. And then your families, the babies, the kids, the old grandmother, they ingest it, you know? So, I mean, it is something that we have to start talking about, but a question I wanted to ask is, and forgive me for how I'm phrasing this, but I mean, I'm calling it as I see it. Is it that we are lacking in I don't want to use the word vision. I want to use the word imagination in terms of how we think about things. And that is where I see the difference in terms of the generation and young science journalists and young scientists who are out there who doing the work, who doing God's work out there, like yourself. You'll have that imagination of, hey, we could do it better. Is it that the generation who is in charge now, just forget the imagination? Because I mean, you can see a plastic bottle. I see an oil. I see an energy. I see an piles that could use bricks, jetty. I seen bricks, I seen roads, I see it. I could use that to patch potholes. They're doing it in India, right? Those same plastic bottles, and we have a pothole problem, we have a plastic problem, we put them together, right? So is it imagination that we from where you sit, is it that we don't want to dream again? Is it that we just accept the world as it? I know it's a kind of broad question, but
I understand where you're coming from. Let me just make a brief point, you know, the plastic that you would have highlighted and how the plastic doesn't go away. A few days ago, you all know Michael Strahan, the journalist from America, Good Morning America. He went to Easter Island and on there they were doing this beach cleanup and they just took up a handful of sand and put it on a sieve. And you would not believe that most of that sand was actually little microplastics, the plastics that broken up. And that was the sand. That was just one handful. And by the time they finished, it was a jar. That's just plastic. So it's just people need to understand these things. But to a point, I wouldn't say it's a lack of vision. I think we need to understand, again, and this is where it comes to that almighty dollar. And I understand the importance of having, you know, a healthy economy and so forth. The reality now, and I know a lot of us would like it to be different, is that we are an oil and natural gas economy. So we depend on oil and natural gas, which is ironically the same thing that is very detrimental for a country like Trinidad right now, oil and natural gas, and the role it plays in climate change. But we are realistic that it is important for the economy now, but we need to be putting ourselves on a path to move away from it and keep, you know, reducing our dependence on oil and natural gas. And that's leaders past and present. Diversification is a big conversation right now. Our agriculture and food import bill is $6 billion a year, roughly that, $6 billion. They have written a ton of articles on it.
US or TT?
No, TT. It's about $1 billion US, so it comes up to about $6 billion.
Nice TT.
So we as a country need to be serious about diversification and moving ourselves away from oil and natural gas. Again, I don't know if it's corny to say I consider myself a rational person, but as I would have said earlier, I understand we can't just cut off oil and natural gas today for tomorrow, but we really need to be putting the country in a position, and we could be investing in so many things. As I just tell you earlier, and to give credit to the government, their initiatives like the different solar power energy stations, there's this push to have people use CNG, you know, they want to green the airport, and there are initiatives being done. I'm not going to be someone saying nothing is being done, but we need to invest in other things as well. We have other products to invest in. Carnival, a sustainable carnival. Ecotourism. We have beautiful beaches here in Trinidad and Tobago, a lot of natural attractions, nice beaches, swamps, a lot of cultural and historical sites, you know, across the country. So investing in tourism, investing in a green economy. So, you know, green hydrogen is something where the world is moving towards now, which is a cleaner form of energy. Things like that we need to be thinking about investing in and more at this point.
You forget on the list, Tyrell, sport and tourism. We spent a lot of money on having world-class sporting facilities. Not Skinner Park, but world-class sporting facilities. Come on.
I would say I use Dubai and Singapore as examples of countries that had, you know, economic booms and they invested those funds properly into sustainable development. I mean, Dubai is very environmentally conscious as a country. They actually have an entire city like is run on renewable energy.
When it comes to the conference year end, I'll get to see it.
But you know.
Yes.
I know we're looking to wrap, but I have to ask this question here because I'm trying to juxtapose the different things that you see. Now, yeah. We have a food import bill that ridiculously yeah. high.
$6 million.
We had to look at, let me say, diversification and that type of thing. Right? Yeah. But we also have a biodiversity issue. So I had to ask this question here. You just eat wild meat?
No, I'm a vegetarian. So let me just put that out there. So I don't eat meat at all. But no judgment to people who do. But that, no, that is an important point. I mean, we laugh that Trinis eat everything, but it's not a joke. Because we actually like doing, you know, damage to the natural wildlife that we have here. I am not an extreme person, so I wouldn't say like ban hunting altogether and support, because I understand that, you know, some people depend on hunting for livelihoods, and but the main part of the conversation and everything that we are doing now should be sustainability, ensuring that we don't wipe it out in one season or in 5 years, and understand that there is life down the road for not only us, but biodiversity as well. So culturally too, we also need to value green, you know, value green spaces and value that we have such rich. We are one of the most biodiverse countries in the Caribbean, very unique too, because we have a lot of species from South America and so forth, based on our proximity and connection to the South American continent at one point in time. So we need to be proud of these things and preserve it. And it could be part of, you know, that way forward that we are talking about in terms of diversification and so forth, like having sustainable ecotourism, because people will pay to come to Trinidad to see some of the things that we have. It's amazing. We live in a beautiful country. And we could invest in that. I mean, oil and natural gas will be there for a period of time, but the goal should be in 10, 15 years that it just becomes a minor part of our economy, a minor part of what we depend on. So we need to start thinking long-term. And I think Aaron would have asked the question earlier, because I know we are wrapping up. I don't think there is a lack of innovation in Trinidad. I'm not the only person that shares these views. We have people now, and it comes back to the point, we need to make sure that people with those views are included in the process moving forward, and we can really help, you know, make this an inclusive planning process of how we're going to move forward. And in that, we could address issues related to climate change. And biodiversity is a lot, but I think if we really put, we as Trinis, if we really put we energy towards something, we know it will get done. So we have a canvas to work with. We need to start painting it.
Listen, I mean, as much as I am also very passionate about this area, I enjoy this conversation, because it's important to learn in that intuitively there's a link between climate change and biodiversity, but there's a couple of things that I would say that I always knew but reinforce and moving on. Climate change, biodiversity, climate change is the same conversation.
Yes.
You know, if we don't understand that and we don't get a handle on it, this impacts our ability to feed ourselves, which is a now problem. Not 10 years, that's a problem now. Because last year, for about 4 days, I couldn't leave my house to go to work. And then time when the grocery, the things I want to buy, I couldn't buy. Right? So that is a no. That is a no, no, no. Fuck it. No, 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 no. And I am convinced in terms of these public consultations versus public involvement. I think if you talk to the hunter, they understand what biodiversity is and why it's important. If you talk to them, you talk to the farmer, they understand it because they feel it and they know. So I mean, kudos to you and the work that you're doing. And I mean, it's not a question, but I had to say those things. Those things are critical. Right? Kudos to you. And then the way that you brought it across was a way that's easily digestible. The last thing as well, very important, and you would have referenced that young people are a little bit different in that they see in it, and that, you know, people talk about young people saving the world. Listen, this is literal. Young people have to save the world. That's just it. All right? So they have to be passionate about what is happening because they have to take this thing over. Yeah? Anyway, I'll pass on to them fellas and them to hit what they want to hit on to prove.
I good. Once I get that wild meat conundrum addressed, I was satisfied because for some people, it's how they eat. And then for others, it's just indulgence, right? So we're looking at protecting our species, but then again, too, you're jamming because of deer, right? We had to look at indulgence as being a part of the reason we have the irresponsibility that we have and the consequences that we have to deal with. So I just want to recognize Mr. Gittin's contribution and recognize the fire and the passion. And to be honest with you, I kind of wish my timing allowed us to be as passionate as you are and your generation is. So I want to give all a full forward for that. As Aaron does keep telling me that the young people saying, big up you.
I think the young people saying something different now, but you're really out of touch with it. But it's cool.
I think he, sometime I and all, you know, they say something. As we like always say, but you're close. but, you know, thank you so much for you all, for, you know, first of all, having this platform just to give people the opportunity to share information and discuss ideas and recognizing, you know, the importance of the environment and having it included. And I am, oh, y'all realize I like to talk a lot. So, I mean, I am always, you know, always willing to come back and continue adding to the conversation whenever needed. You all continue the great work that you are doing. We need more stuff like this, and we need people to understand the importance of conversation as well. The discussion.
Last thing I go and say, because I have to run now. If it had a song to sum up today's conversation, it would be Cream. And a Zoom as a hip hop enthusiast, like I know you are, you would know about that song.
Definitely.
Cream.
Choose everything around me. Man.
Cream. Dollar bill, y'all.
Yeah,
man. Again, Cyril, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the work that you are doing. I always end any interview that I am a part of by telling people that love is the currency, so spend some today, let somebody know that you love them. And also now I tell people that culture is my code. So when I heard you talk about the fact that we could parcel carnival and sell it, watch now, it resonated with me. Because we could watch Brazil and talk about how nice them making things look, and then we... Anyway, let me not go down that road because we might be talking until tomorrow morning. So, guys, I am out.
Yeah, but you're on, man.
Double salute.
Just one time. Thanks again. Thanks a lot, bro.
Yeah, man.
Well, I know you're another step out there, but there's one last thing I just wanted to give you an opportunity on. I didn't really discuss this with you before, Sarah, but normally when we're closing out, we normally ask guests and, you know, and we will contribute to as well. In terms of, is there anything that you are looking at, reading, watching that you think is interesting that you wanted to kind of share on? It could be something serious, it could be something funny, it could be anything, it doesn't matter. We just use it as a way to kind of share some of the things that you may be involved in or looking at, or it doesn't have to be along the lines of your work that you think the audience might be interested in taking up or looking at.
So, first of all, I'm going to have to, you know, give a promo. I'm currently the project coordinator of the Caribou Environmental News Network. It's part of the Cropper Foundation. So it's like a environmental reporting platform. It started in Trinidad, but I've had the opportunity over the last few months to help expand that regionally. So I'm working with writers and creators from around the Caribbean. If you check out our social media pages, I promise you there are interesting articles, some videos that we are working on that really speaks about environmental issues around the Caribbean and share that perspective. And some of them have, like, you know, some incredible information, some things that we would have talked about today, like the importance of agriculture and climate change and how it affects people and all those different interesting stuff. As I tell you, we're working on videos. So it's a really nice platform. I'm very happy to be part of that. It's a very creative platform, and I can tell you the people involved in writing those stories and so on, you know, really passionate. So, Caribou.
Can you share the link with us so that we could send
yes. it out as well? Yeah. I could definitely do that. I would give Climate Tracker some plug as well, because they do a lot of incredible to give it a global perspective. So it really shows how, you know, climate change and environment is like global issues and so forth. Away from work, you know, I always do it. So early on I didn't say, but I'm not sure if Ricardo know, but all of my journalists, I'm actually a geographer. So my degree is in geography and environmental and resource management, and I have a master's in biodiversity conservation and sustainable development, both from UWE. So I'm an environmentalist, which also means I'm all nerd. So I watch like a lot of documentaries and so forth. So if you go onto YouTube, I mean, I'm a huge fan of like Vice, like the YouTube channel, not...
Vice
the YouTube channel, Vox. And then there is also one called DW Documentary, and they have a lot of environmental pieces. It's really, you know, interesting stuff. I always encourage people, because that is how I got involved in like learning about the environment and so on, to just read, and like it really is interesting. I promise, if you sit down and start watching an environmental documentary, it can be about animals. It doesn't just have to be about climate change. Sometimes, you know, the documentary shows how politics and so on, you know, affecting environmental issues. So it's not like just watching like nice birds, which is great as well. So have a lot of interesting resources that people could get out there and get involved with. I'm very passionate about it. So you see how excited I then get, you know, talking about it already.
Thanks for sharing that, because there's a lot of real good resources out there. Sometimes people may want to know how to start, or I'm interested in this area and what can I read or what can I get.
Yeah.
And I like the creative platform there as well, so definitely
would be definitely. Yeah, Caribou.
As well. Yeah.
We really, and what we want to do is encourage people to send us stories if they like to write. You don't need to be like a professional person. Send us these stories, we'll edit it, we'll guide, and we want to guide to a place where we can help, you know, other people who may have video ideas and stuff, bring those things to life and shine our spotlight and the environment. So I'm very passionate to be working on that particular project. But just to encourage people to be curious, but please leave the wildlife alone. I know the video of the fish that somebody has stolen. Apparently it is a batfish from Brazil, but when you see things, it's good to see it. Sometimes it's good to just leave it, you know, in the ocean, right? Like, not everything we need to be like calling in a net or killing for videos. Like, if you see snakes, please stop killing them. I'm not the biggest fan of snakes, but like call the zoo or just leave. Snakes would not attack you if you don't do anything to it. So just be conscious of these things as well.
I agree 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
All right, boys, well, that will be it. Let me stop the recording.
Thanks for listening to Inquisitive Minds Podcast. You can find more episodes on YouTube, Anchor.fm, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere that hosts your favorite podcasts.